pick up with Ms. Greenberg.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon.
Just try to keep your voice up if you can.
There is absolutely nothing in this record that supports Ms. Wysocki's statement that she started with about how many times the doctor was contacted about the misplaced or non-inserted or removed NG tube. The appellate division did what it was supposed to do with regard to an affidavit of merit motion. It looked at the pleadings and it even said in its opinion, defendants here are alleged not to have taken any action, not even making a telephone call to the attending physician to alert him of the NG tube's dislodgement and to seek further instructions under the circumstances. That, if taken as true, is not frivolous. The purpose of the affidavit of merit statute is to weed out frivolous cases. The failure to follow a physician's order and or advise the physician if it cannot be followed is meritorious on its face. The purpose of the affidavit of merit statute would be disturbed if the appellate division is reversed. The common knowledge exception to the affidavit of merit statute relieves plaintiff of the obligation to supply an affidavit of merit if expert testimony would be unnecessary to establish the standard of care that's required. In other words, if jurors' everyday common knowledge and experience is sufficient to make that determination. Everybody knows by the time they're in grade school that there will be consequences if orders are not followed. An affidavit of merit should not be necessary, for example, if an attorney disregards a court order and his complaint's dismissed. And on its face, a jury should be able to evaluate the consequences of the failure to obey a court order without an expert. Court order is what it is. It's an order. And so is a physician's order. The failure to have either reinserted the tube or at the very least advised plaintiff's physicians that she refused reinsertion did not require an expert. Bottom line is, the order was still in effect and the nurses did nothing, at least according to this record. It makes no difference whether their failure to ensure compliance or at least advise the doctor of non-compliance was ab initio when the order was first given or whether it was later on down the road. The order was still in effect. The Bryan versus Shaw and the Jackson case make that clear. There were ongoing derelictions in both those cases that were held not to be subject to the affidavit of merit statute because they were common knowledge. It wasn't a matter of, well, the order was written and it was never carried out. There were ongoing issues. And if it's true that plaintiff refused the reinsertion, that still doesn't remove this case from the common knowledge exception for the reasons I just stated, namely that the order remained in effect. If the nurses had done something, then I would submit you would need an affidavit of merit because then you would need an expert to say what they did was adequate, inadequate, or otherwise. But you don't need an expert if they did nothing. There was also no Ferriera conference in this case. Arguably, if there was one, we wouldn't be here. And the court's omission should not inure to the detriment of an injured plaintiff. And finally, no one is saying a patient doesn't have autonomy. No one is saying that Ms. Calley didn't have the right to refuse the insertion of that tube. The question is, was doing nothing in the face of that alleged refusal inappropriate? And I would suggest, based upon the cases that we cited, that doing nothing does not require an expert. Doing nothing in the face of an ongoing order is within the ken of the average juror, and therefore the common knowledge exception should apply. And if Your Honors have any questions?
My first question is,
how do we know, how would anyone know that the order remains in effect without knowing whether or not within the realm of the medical profession, when an NG tube comes out, it's either pulled out or falls out, a new order has to be issued because there has to be a determination whether or not it should be reinserted, whether or not there was damage done when it came out. I'm trying to figure out, where is this common knowledge that this order is ongoing after an NG tube falls out?
I believe that it would be inherent in the order itself. If something were to be done once, for example, give the patient one pill or something like that, the order should say that. If the order says insert an NG tube, well, just common sense and logic would dictate it should remain in effect until and unless that order is rescinded or changed.
But remaining in effect is one thing. This is an invasive procedure. Once it comes out, all sorts of things could occur on its way out. Are you saying that we should be accepting as just a fact given and as a matter of law that when an NG tube comes out, an order that was originally entered for its placement requires a nurse without more to reinsert an NG tube? Can you say that?
Counsel, that's the one argument counsel didn't make. Counsel never even intimated that the order was no longer in effect, and I think if it weren't, she would have done that. There's no evidence in this record that the order was rescinded or anything like that. I think that the logical inference in view of any evidence to the contrary is that the order remained in effect. And if the nurse was unsure about whether it should be reinserted, whether the order should continue to be carried out in view of the recent developments, let's assume that Your Honor is correct, that maybe it was damaged or something like that, you know, in your hypothetical. At the very least, she should have made a phone call. She should have said to the doctor, you know, I see this order. I'm having a problem. Here's what the problem is. What do you want me to do about it?
How about the fact that patients have rights and they're handed literature at every admission to the hospital? Here are your rights. If someone pulls out an invasive piece of equipment and it's their right to do so, then perhaps the proper procedure, you say something should have been done. Perhaps what's called for under those guidelines is to do nothing because the patient doesn't want it in which case you would need an expert to say it should have been put in or a doctor should have been called. Perhaps your argument is that if they had done something, then you need an expert, but because they did nothing, that was wrong. But the flaw in that is that perhaps doing nothing is the correct thing to do because of the patient's first act.
Well, I don't think that you can force a patient to have something they don't want, and that is an invasive procedure.
Right.
But so I think that the doctor should have been made aware of the refusal to have it reinserted
But you're not
possibly prescribed an alternative or come in and talk to her himself or whatever.
But your answer comes in terms of, I think, possibly, isn't it?
But
neither you nor I are doctors, neither you or I are trained nurses, neither you or I work in that environment. So perhaps the only thing, the correct thing to do is to do nothing. I'm not saying that it is, but if that's the case, then it would not be common knowledge. You would have an expert to come in and testify, something should have been done. So, because you're saying, I think, possible, and so am I, but neither of us are really qualified to give an affidavit of merit on this.
No, we're not, but...
This was also in the early morning hours that this is apparently removed or fell out. There was going to be a procedure later in the morning. Don't we have to know what the standard of care is in those circumstances, given that there might be just a short period of time before there may be a doctor on call, and particularly if we accept the fact that she was refusing the reinsertion of the tube? Wouldn't we have to know what the standard of care is under those circumstances?
I think you do know that here's an order that is not being followed, and that some sort of follow-up is required. Maybe there's some other way of dealing with it, maybe the doctor's gonna rescind the order, maybe he's gonna change it, but he should at least be notified of it.
If we're just looking at the pleadings, the complaint doesn't even indicate what the NG tube is doing. I know we got more information from defendant's counsel. It's not indicating whether or not it's a feeding tube, whether or not it's giving medication, whether or not it's withdrawing the contents of this. We don't know anything about that. So, and without that information, it's impossible to know the role it's playing, or whether or not it's playing a necessary role.
Well, New Jersey, number one, is a notice pleading state. Your Honor may not know that because nobody in this room is a physician or a nurse. But certainly,
you don't think we know that New Jersey is a notice pleading state?
But no, I'm talking about what the tube was doing. But certainly, defendants knew what the tube was doing, in view of what she was hospitalized for.
But you're alleging a breach of a duty of care, and you're saying that the common knowledge exception relieved you of having to provide an affidavit of merit, because you're saying, well, the duty of care would have been obvious to anyone, right?
Yes. Well, she aspirated. That is in the complaint, which leads to the inference that the tube was doing exactly what Ms. Wysocki said it was. She was hospitalized for a bowel obstruction and some other bowel issues. That's also in the complaint, which would also lead to the inference that the tube was removing stomach contents that couldn't pass through the bowel because of the obstruction. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a ruptured bowel and possibly some other very unpleasant things. And certainly, they would know, being served with that summons and complaint, what that tube was supposed to have been doing.
So the case law deals with fairly straightforward fact patterns. The wrong tooth was pulled. A gas line was used instead of a fluid line. Would you agree that this is a more complex situation here, when the issue is, do we reinsert a tube after a patient has removed it and refused?
I think that issue was for a physician, and yes, that issue was more complex, but that the physician's not being sued here. The issue here is, there's an order that, based on this record, there's nothing to say it wasn't in effect. There's an order that remained in effect that was not being followed.
So your case is premised on an argument that the nurses deviated from the nursing standard of care.
Yes.
Okay. And so you say to us that the nursing standard of care required them to take certain action when it came to when this event happened.
Yes.
And you say that no affidavit of merit and no expert testimony is necessary to establish what it is they were supposed to do.
Yes. The common sense, as the appellate division
said, common sense.
Common sense would dictate jurors know it. They make a phone call.
The future jurors in this case right now have knowledge of what the nursing standard of care is with respect to the event of a removal of a nasogastric tube. They're all out there now doing their jobs. They're all aware of what should be done.
I don't think they need to know that. I don't think they need to know any of the specifics. I think all they need to know is there was an order in effect that was not followed, and it was not brought to the physician's attention that the order was not being followed.
But you have a clash between patient autonomy and the order. Who wins?
That's for the physician to discuss with the patient. The problem here is that this was never brought to the doctor's attention. The nurses saw that she'd taken it out, she allegedly refused reinsertion, and after that they did nothing.
For what period of time? You said they did nothing. From the time that she either removed the tube or it fell out to the time that doctors were on call and seeing her, how much time elapsed, do you know?
I don't. I would suggest that the tube was out long enough for her to aspirate. How long, because that's in the complaint. How long that time period was, I do not know.
Do you think the duty of care in a setting such as this, a structured, hierarchical setting of a hospital dealing with multi-disciplines, can be answered as simply on the basis of common knowledge of a nurse's reaction to this situation without an affidavit of merit that certifies that the duty has been breached here?
I do, because I think the duty extends to, if there's a problem, getting someone else to do something about it or notifying the physician. If they had done something medical, for example, taking it upon themselves to reinsert the tube, well, then you get into the issue Justice Albin raised.
But it works in the negative too. It works in the context of whether or not the nurse can be viewed as overstepping appropriate bounds in undertaking unitary action as quickly as the patient would have preferred, and obviously, you know, may have needed, in order to define breach of professional care.
I missed the beginning of that, I'm sorry.
I'm just trying to understand how common knowledge will fit into understanding the appropriate professional response of a nurse when there are multiple bodies within which, or professions that she might have to interact in order to understand her duties reacting to the patient's situation without having an affidavit of merit to certify to it.
Well, as I said, I think that no one is saying she had to substitute her judgment for the doctor's. I wouldn't say that. I think that would be inappropriate, as Your Honor pointed out. If an order is not being followed for whatever reason, the person who gave that order should be apprised of that fact. That's what we're saying, and you don't need an expert to prove that.
I take it from that your position at this point in the proceeding is that for the purpose of determining whether failure to follow a doctor's order is a deviation, that's a matter of common knowledge. You're limited to that, right, for the purpose of the affidavit of merit statute.
Yes, and that's. That's what the appellate division did. Also, the case is limited to that theory because that's all that falls.
Well, for now, do you acknowledge that as you proceed and more facts come out, including some of which may be in the record and elsewhere, then you may certainly be subject to a motion for summary judgment that would require expert testimony and expert report.
If the facts that come out during discovery don't support that allegation, then I would submit to Your Honor, you're probably right. And the appellate division said that too, that there was nothing precluding them and them being defendants, and that the appellate division's opinion is not to be construed as prohibiting a summary judgment later on. It's simply saying that if the facts come out as we believe them to be, no affidavit of merit is required.
You are limiting it to the allegation that a doctor ordered insertion of the tube and it was not followed. And that's it for our purposes.
And no one was notified of the fact that it was
all right.
So that's your whole case.
Hold on. Let me finish the. That's not my question. For our purposes, under the affidavit of merit statute, at this stage in the proceedings, your allegation is, at this stage, nothing more, no medical records, no depositions, no nothing being considered by the trial court, that at that point, the only thing we have is whether it's a matter of common knowledge that a doctor's order should be followed. That's where we are now.
Yes.
And as facts come out, including what the medical records say happened on a daily basis, perhaps an expert saying, no, under these circumstances, something different, there's a different responsibility, then you might indeed be subject to a motion for summary judgment and lose if you don't have expert testimony. You acknowledge that?
Yes.
So you'd be able to fix it when the summary judgment motion is filed and frustrating the affidavit of merit's purpose? Because if a motion for summary judgment is filed and then you obtain an expert, to counter that. That means that we're no longer in the common knowledge, and the affidavit of merit's purpose is frustrated.
I guess in this context, that's true.
Only if additional facts come out. I mean, if there's, because we've heard facts about what the medical records say that aren't in, as I understand it, the trial court record.
No, they're not.
And that's your contention, and therefore, presumably, not on our record. So if additional facts come out and say it was reinserted this time, it was reinserted this time, it was reinserted this time, and it was pulled out again right before surgery, you get a different problem. That's a whole different set of facts. You understand that?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you acknowledge, forget about the affidavit of merit for one moment, do you acknowledge that you cannot proceed with this case without an expert?
Not if it turns out to be what we think it is.
No, even assuming you're able to proceed with this hurdle now, do you acknowledge that you cannot proceed with this medical malpractice case without an expert? You don't have, you can't prove causation without an expert. Even if we were to accept your common knowledge, where are you going without an expert?
We'll allow you time to think about it. is there anything else you'd like to present? Anything else you'd like to add?
No.
Thank you. Mr. Brown.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. So please, the court, I'd actually like to address a question by Justice Solomon, Justice Alvin first. The affidavit of merit statute does not require any statement about causation. The case is Bender versus Walgreens, 399 NJ Super 584. It's consistently been, the affidavit of merit is just to threshold, is the case frivolous?
I understand.
The first thing I'd like to address from the standpoint of my constituency is, as amicus, is how to fix this problem. The problem with this case is there was no Ferrara conference. If there was a Ferrara conference and there was no objection, as I understand it, until 122 days after the affidavit of merit was due when defendants filed their motion. They did not object before, since I think AT versus Cohen or maybe Meehan, the rules have court have changed and you have to file your objection promptly.
Did they ask for the affidavit in their answer?
I'm sure they did, I don't know. But that's always common, it's standard that defendants would ask for the affidavit.
Was it a deliberate decision?
And even if they didn't ask for it, the plaintiff has an obligation to provide it.
Was it a deliberate decision on plaintiff's part not to provide it? No.
The plaintiff made a decision that they don't need an affidavit of merit. And I'll tell you the best way, I had a case similar to this in Monmouth County. I had a case, in fact, this is New Jersey Pure Insured, an OBGYN performed cosmetic procedures and burned a woman severely, sending her to the burn unit. I could not find an OBGYN who does this procedure, so I got a dermatologist who teaches the procedure. Defendant objected promptly. And the affidavit of merit conference, the Ferrara conference, was the motion. Judge Quinn decided that my affidavit was sufficient, and that was the end of the story.
Mr. Brown, with all due respect and great respect, you filed an affidavit of merit.
Yes.
So there was something to object to. Yeah.
But the point is that...
Let me just play that out. They didn't serve an affidavit of merit or file an affidavit of merit. So you're saying their objection was late, but their objection wasn't, there's something wrong with the affidavit of merit. There wasn't one.
But it's the same difference. The point that I'm trying to make is, if there was an affidavit of merit conference, in this case, a Ferrara conference, that issue could have been resolved. The trial court would have said, I rule against you. This is not a common knowledge case. The plaintiff would then have gone and gotten the affidavit of merit, and none of us would have been here.
In your case, I'm sure that's so.
And in this case,
we're hearing from this plaintiff.
Yes.
They didn't need the affidavit of merit. They didn't need it then. They don't need it now. There wasn't an answer on whether they think they can go forward without expert testimony, but I'm kind of thinking that's where they're headed.
That's with
great respect, that's very different from your case, where there's a fight over the contents of that affidavit.
But the concept of let's resolve these problems at the affidavit of merit conference is what I was trying to make the point.
Tease that out if you could a little bit more.
Yes.
At the conference itself, you said the judge would resolve the issue. Is the judge in a position to resolve that merits issue at that moment?
Judge Quinn asked us to brief the issue, and we briefed it, and he resolved it. The problem is, in some, and that's pretty much the practice in most counties now, but in some courts, you have an affidavit of merit conference and the defendant objects and the judge says, well, file a motion. By the time you file a motion and it's adjourned, you're at the deadline. The affidavit of merit conference should be the motion to determine the adequacy of the affidavit of merit.
Is it a little bit more complicated when we're talking about whether the affidavit has to be filed in a common knowledge case?
No, I don't think so. Because even in this case, if the plaintiff's attorney had asserted, look, our case is based on a simple fact. There was an order entered and it wasn't followed. The plaintiff's attorney, and I think our brief also cited the federal court cases which say the failure to follow an order in the first instance is prima facie evidence of malpractice. And the difference that I think the court's been struggling with is sometimes after discovery, the common knowledge doctrine only provides a presumption that can be rebutted. So there are common knowledge cases where, for example, in this case, plaintiff may say the doctor ordered and entered an order, the patient extubated, and you did not notify us or comply with the order. The defense may then say, well, here's expert testimony saying that we should not have done that for various reasons. There was an injury. There could be all kinds of issues. And then we get into a case where there's going to be a battle of the experts.
Why should the plaintiff be able to respond by silence to the affidavit of merit obligation and then later claim common knowledge? If that's their theory of compliance with the affidavit of merit, why shouldn't plaintiff have to affirmatively serve a statement upon defendants that an affidavit of merit will not be filed because plaintiff is claiming common knowledge?
There's never been a case or a rule that requires that.
Doesn't it make sense? The obligation to satisfy the statute belongs on the plaintiff.
Yes, and the obligation to say that you need an affidavit of merit is on the defendant, and the obligation to have a Ferrara conference is on the court. So,
but the court can't solve every problem for plaintiff's attorneys.
No, or for defense attorneys. It's not a plaintiff's attorney's problem. If there was a Ferrara conference in this case, and if the judge said to plaintiff's counsel, Mr. Brown, I don't think this is a common knowledge case, the plaintiff would have had the opportunity to cure this issue and we would not be here.
But we're hearing, Mr. Brown, from this plaintiff that they still maintain they don't need the expert. So what obligation are you putting on the court? Are you putting on the court persuading a lawyer that they're heading onto some very thin ice?
No. The obligation on the court is to have an affidavit of merit conference. Obligations on the defendant, and the plaintiff at that point says, I don't need an affidavit of merit, and the defendant then says, I think you do, and the obligation on the court is to make that decision.
At a preliminary conference without a motion?
No. Well, if there's an objection, it should be briefed, and the conference, what I'm suggesting, is the motion. Ultimately, it has to be a motion. Ultimately, it's got to be decided. I'm suggesting it should be at the very initial affidavit of merit conference, like it was in my case. There was briefs were filed. In fact, websites were copied, and there was a full record.
And the lawyer had in front. I'm sorry, the judge had in front of him or her your affidavit of merit because you served one.
Yes.
The Ferrara conference in this case is in a vacuum. The court might be able to see a very sparse pleading or whatever. I don't know if that's even before the court, but the court has no knowledge from which to make a determination.
Well, if the plaintiff or the defendant says, if the plaintiff says, I'm not going to serve an affidavit of merit, or the defendant says, you have to serve an affidavit of merit, this is not common knowledge, at the conference that would be discussed. And in fact, in our case, we had a conference, we discussed the issue, the judge said, send me briefs in a week, and we decided it. So in this case, if there was a conference, the plaintiff would have said, I don't need an affidavit of merit because this is common knowledge. The doctor entered an order and the nurse did nothing at all.
Are you arguing on behalf of the NJAJ that the scenario in this case does not require expert testimony?
Oh, it might require expert testimony. It's certainly going to require expert testimony on causation and damages. It might require expert testimony on liability depending on the facts.
Deviation from the standard of care. This case.
Are you,
as a friend of the court, telling us that it does not require expert testimony?
If the case is simply the nurse did not follow an order of the court, then I believe it is a common knowledge case. I believe it's within the knowledge of a jury. As counsel said, we all know what an order is. So if the case is limited to the nurse did not follow the order of the doctor, then I don't believe an affidavit of merit is necessary, and perhaps not even expert testimony is necessary. It gets complicated because you really can't separate that from the issues of damages. And statute,
well,
and
you
the standard
you,
of care
you
is...
You need to articulate the standard of care that applies to nurses, all aspects.
Ultimately, you probably will.
You do.
Yes.
You
and
do.
The problem is the affidavit of merit is almost like a preliminary hearing because we don't have discovery yet. We don't know what the nurse is going to say in her deposition. She may say, I took it upon myself to do nothing. Or she may say, I spoke to the judge, to the doctor. That's part of the problem with the affidavit of merit. It's relatively early in the case. Even though I have a chance to get the records and review them at my leisure before I file suit, a lot of the information, perhaps half the information, is not in the record. Especially in a case like this, you need to take the depositions of the parties to find out what actually happened, because that's not recorded.
So we know certain things if based upon the medical records. Okay. The NG tube came out. The patient refused to have it reinserted, resisted. And are you saying that it's a matter of common knowledge? An earlier order for the insertion of an NG tube that has now been taken out and where the patient has refused its reinsertion, that order has to now, that order is a continuing order to be carried out even over the objection and with the resistance of the patient? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that.
As a matter of common knowledge?
As a matter of common knowledge, something has to be done. The nurse has got to contact the supervising nurse, the charge nurse, or the doctor, but the allegation in this case is the nurse did absolutely nothing. That was the record that I gathered when I read the appellate division case.
Do you think a case should go to a jury based upon the following? The patient was in the hospital, an order wasn't followed, something had to be done. I'm finished, case closed, go to the jury. In a medical malpractice case, we're not talking about a slip and fall.
In rare cases, it could.
Have you ever seen
on
one? I'm not even going to ask you if you ever went that route, because I know the answer. You never did. You always had an expert. But have you ever seen a case get to a jury on proofs like that? It's almost like a res ipsa medical malpractice case.
Well, common knowledge and res ipsa are very closely related, except res ipsa you need the expert to establish that it's known within the medical community.
Right.
For example,
you still need an expert.
Sponge cases can go to a jury without an expert. You leave a sponge or a foreign object, I've had those cases, without an expert. They haven't gone to a jury, they've resolved, but theoretically they could go to a jury without an expert because that's
I'm not saying sponge case.
That's
I'm
a form of common
about
knowledge.
I'm talking about an order was given. Something different from the order happened. I'm done. That's the end of the proofs. That goes to the jury.
The order was given and it was not followed.
It was not followed. Something happened. The tube came out and the tube didn't end up back in.
In all candor, it would depend on the facts. Probably it would be rare, but not impossible. But it really is very fact sensitive, which is part of the problem with the affidavit of merit, because we don't have all the facts. Even if I have the record and I've gone over it line by line, we still don't know what happened, what conversations, because these are not recorded. So the affidavit of merit is just the preliminary step to make sure the case is not frivolous, and it's worked out extraordinarily well. I mean, in 1994, there were 2,500 malpractice cases filed. Last year, it'll be approximately 950. The number of defendants have gone down per case. So the affidavit of merit statute has worked very well, but it's not the proof of the case. It's just simply saying this case is not frivolous, and what the plaintiff is saying is that where you have a case that is based on a doctor gives an order and the nurse does not follow that order, that's not frivolous on its face.
Mr. Brown, you've made a thoughtful argument there should be a Ferrara conference in cases such
right,
as this.
Every case.
You familiar with the automation efforts that the AOC has undertaken recently, well after the filing of this case? Would it avoid the problem if this case were to take place today? You're not sure.
I'm not sure, but I do know if the court has ordered several times now that affidavit of merit conferences must be held in every case unless there's a waiver. If an affidavit of merit conference had been held in this case, we would not be here. I'm very confident saying that.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Yes, just one last thing. I'd like to, if I may, thank my partner, Christina Harvey. She wrote the brief on this case. She's written 6 amicus briefs in the last 3 years and was counsel, you may recall, in the remitter case. So I just wanted to give the credit where the credit is.
I'm sorry, we never had one of the.
Thank you.
Yes. I wanted to.
No, but that's very nice of you to do.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Wysocki, brief rebuttal.
May it please the court. I'd like to respond to some of the to the comments in regards to multiple references to the very early nature of an affidavit of merit. And it seems to be suggesting that plaintiff is unable to determine whether this really is common knowledge or whether an expert is required because the case is so early in litigation. And I think that is just inaccurate. Because at the point in time that a complaint is filed, the plaintiff has the relevant medical record, or they certainly should have the relevant medical record. And contained within this relevant medical record, in this case, are the facts necessary to determine what the nurses did in this particular fact pattern. Representations, and understanding full well that many of those medical records are not before this court because of the nature of the motion that was filed, that doesn't relieve plaintiff of their burden to have looked at those medical records and understand what the facts are.
So everything you're saying is correct. One of the purposes of the Ferreira conference was to save attorneys from themselves, because ultimately it's their clients' cases that would be dismissed. That's the reason why we instituted the Ferreira conference, okay? Because innocent litigants were having their cases dismissed because attorneys weren't doing what they were supposed to do. And that's it. So at the Ferreira conference, with respect to the affidavits, at least, if there were deficiencies, those were supposed to be hashed out so that a corrected affidavit would be filed and a meritorious case would not be dismissed. So one of the issues is whether or not, like, hashing out this common knowledge issue might not be an appropriate thing at the Ferreira conference as well. To save a meritorious case or to get rid of an unmeritorious one.
I understand where the court is coming from. I respectfully do not believe that the Affidavit of Merit conference, with all due respect to counsel on my right, is the place to have that determination made. It is the place to have issues raised as to what potential problems exist, but we need to step back and remember that, in fact, the demand is made for an affidavit of merit, and until the opposition was filed, understanding the case, there was no notice that this would ever be something that would be suggested to be common knowledge. So there has to, if one of the things that we were talking about as we ended this morning's session was what needs to be done. The Affidavit of Merit conference certainly addresses many of these issues. But also available to these plaintiffs within the statute itself is the opportunity to ask for more time if they believe extraordinary circumstances exist for them to need it. So if they don't have the information they have or they don't have the medical records, that was never ever addressed by this plaintiff at any point in time. They never sought leave for additional 60 days. They never sought leave for additional time after that for extraordinary circumstances. Yes, can an affidavit of merit conference force an attorney to look at their file and actually think it through and say, the judge is going to say, is there an affidavit? And the plaintiff's attorney says no. And she goes, well, are you going to get one? And he says, no, I think it's common knowledge. Does the burden shift at that point to the defendants in the current environment? Yes. To say, I disagree, I don't think it's an affidavit of merit conference. But that's not the forum for that determination to be made. That determination.
Any other points you wanted to cover?
No, Your Honor. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, and thank you to all counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.